One of the things you realize when you face a literal plane crash or a traumatic life event, whatever you want to call it, is the person with the most certainty in uncertain times becomes the leader. And it doesn't really matter if you're the CEO of a company or you're the guy who's doing being a janitor at midnight. If you exude certainty and give people certainty, then all of a sudden they look to you to be the leader and you step up. And I think that's one of the greatest lessons that I know I learned that day, but I played. And because one of the things you realize is, you know, there are leaders all over that plane, but there are only a few people that gave certainty in that uncertain time.
This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 120, with speaker, author, and survivor of the Miracle on the Hudson, Dave Anderson.
This is squadron leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things geek.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey, girls and guys, welcome back to the Angles of Latitude podcast. I'm your host, JC Preston, and today's guest co-host is David Anderson. He's co-author of The Delusion of Passion, Why Millennials Struggle to Find Success. You know, the reason I wanted to have David on with me in this particular chat is because he's a huge proponent of having a personal mission. You know, it's this personal mission which has gotten him to where he is, and part of that is actually working in the White House. If you want to find out more about him, check out the interview I did with him back in session 92, where we talk about why it's vital to have a personal mission as a creative. Speaking of personal missions, in our interview with Dave today, you'll hear how having a mission allowed him to not only get through the traumatic event of the plane crashing into the Hudson, but actually come away from it stronger than he had been prior to. You know, he's really the embodiment of the phrase, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So in our chat today, we'll be discussing how he began working with Tony Robbins. Yes, he's worked with Tony Robbins. What triggered him to become a thought leader and write his first book, and some common traits that he sees when engaging with successful people around the world. Before we get to the conversation, just want to remind you guys about Fizzle. And, you know, in today's chat with Dave, you're going to find out what it took for him to get started in the right direction in life and eventually to start his own business. However, many folks don't have the resources to do what he did, but they still want to begin their own thing. And so they go looking for help, and many times they find a group on Facebook where they can get information. Now, you know, I don't have anything against this because I personally host the Mission Driven Junto group. But the thing about Fizzle is that as a member, you get access to more than a community. You also get access to all kinds of courses and a weekly personal coaching session. You know, basically the stuff that you'd be getting if you bought into a course. The difference is, however, if you don't need to drop $500 or more to find out if it's actually useful for you. You get your first month for free, and then from there on, you get all that you want for a flat rate of $35 a month. What's great is that they've stuck with that price since I got started back in 2015. And another thing is this, you know, perhaps you can't pay for a membership for a month. You know, nothing wrong with that. Just cancel for that month and then resume when you can afford to start again. They completely understand because they've been where you are. So if this sounds like a great deal, because it is, get started on your free month today by visiting newinceptions.com/fizzle. Again, that's newinceptions.com/FIZZLE. All right, so about to get started. Don't forget to subscribe to the show. You can still do that on iTunes, but I've been actually wanting to tell you guys about a new app that I've been using to listen to podcasts. It's called CastBox, and you can find it on Android as well as the iOS. Great little free app, and you can leave comments on all your favorite podcasts. And, you know, I've actually heard Jordan Harbinger talking about it. And, you know, he engages with all of his listeners on there. So I'd love to hear from you guys on that. Again, that app is called CastBox. Anyway, show notes and show note extras of this conversation can be found at newinceptions.com/120. And I'll be on after the show to fill you in on anything we might have missed. Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. I'm JC Preston, and today's guest co-host, we don't have many guest co-hosts, is David Anderson. How are you doing today, David?
I am awesome, JC. How are you, sir?
Doing great, man. Doing great. A lot of cool things have been happening your way, as I understand, since you've been back on session 92. What's going on in your world real quick?
Well, since we've talked last, a lot of good things. One, I'm a father, about Congrats. To be a dad two times over. I got a boy in the oven, but I have a girl who's now 2 years old. So that's a lot of fun, a little sleep. I took on a very entrepreneurial kind of corporate position because of the global nature of it. So I now travel around the world. I'm over about three different continents where I do aviation deals. So from with governments and local airlines. So it's quite dynamic. It's very, very interesting.
Are you still finding yourself talking about your guys' book at all? Or?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I mean, it comes up in every conversation. They're like, we see you're an author about, you know, millennials and the future. And
Yeah. Cool. Well, definitely glad having you back. And I'm looking forward to our conversation with our guest today.
Yes.
Yeah. Really cool guy. The part of the reason I wanted you to be in on this chat is because we did talk about, besides millennials, personal mission and how that's really huge to people being successful and, you know, having a bit of self-discipline and, you know, all that goes into giving yourself opportunities to really succeed in life.
That's right.
You know, I mean, and today's guest, who is Dave Sanderson, is actually a pretty unique guest because really not everyone can say that they survived an airplane crash. And I'm saying that in quotes. Yeah, you know, and back in 2009, where everybody in the audience, you might remember an event called the Miracle on the Hudson, where U.S. Airways Flight 1549 ditched into the Hudson River. And this was a crash that actually the movie Sully was all about. So if you didn't hear it on the news, you probably heard about the movie. But during the crash, today's guest, Dave, you know, he realized that he was where he was supposed to be to handle that traumatic event. And despite the hazards to himself, Sanderson thought only of helping others and emerged from the wreckage with a personal mission to encourage others to do the right thing. So today, he actually travels the globe sharing his inspirational and motivational leadership messages to help people make a difference to how they do business and live their lives. And he can be found on DaveSandersonSpeaks.com. Dave, welcome to the show.
How you doing? Thank you very much, JC and David, for having me. I'm excited to be on with you today.
Been looking forward to it for a little bit. But tell me a little bit about yourself and, you know, what you were all about before the plane went down.
Well, thanks. For 30 plus years, I was in sales, primarily technology sales. After I graduated from James Madison University in international business, and back in the early 80s, there wasn't many jobs, A, to be found, but B, especially international business. I figured out that I had to get a job, so I got into restaurant management. But about 2.5 years later, I figured out that that was great, but I needed to get something where I could actually make some money. So I got into sales, and I was in sales for 30 plus years for about 10 of those years, though, for the last 10 years of that sales career, I was also a head of security for a gentleman named Tony Robbins. And I got a chance to not only travel with Tony, but I learned and absorbed everything he taught and make sure I could support his mission and he make sure he could do his mission. So I was the guy not only managing our security team, but managing his logistics, making sure that he could do what he needed to do. So I, in addition to having wife and four kids, I was doing that and working and just trying to do what dads do, is take care of their family and support them as every way I could. So And then we had the miracle on the Hudson happen, and all of a sudden everything started changing in my life.
Right, right, right. So real quick, how does a sales guy become head of security for Tony Robbins?
Well, that's an interesting story. So here's the brief version, the short version. So back in the early 90s, I went to one of his seminars. Like most people do, I paid the money. Within that year, I became the number one salesperson in the company, which was about 2,000 salespeople at that point. It was ADP at that time. I lost like 30 pounds, the whole thing. So it's like, wow, you know, if I could do that by going to one seminar, what could I get by going to more stuff? So I started volunteering for his events. Mm. So I'd be the guy out there putting brochures down at midnight, right, where everybody else is doing their thing. But one night we were in Maui, Hawaii, and his former wife got in a situation where she was with two gentlemen, and I'm sure they did not have any malintent, but she was looking uncomfortable. So I went and basically said, "Hey, Mrs. Robbins, Mr. Robbins is looking for you." And she said, "Thank you." And as I walked her back, she said, "You handled that pretty well. Would you like to be on security team?" And I'm like, "That's a heck of a lot better to hand out brochures." So she put me in the green room at the back door of the green room. So for 5 days, I sat there and didn't move. I just watched, you know, make sure no one got in the green room, but just watched how everything happened. And over the next about 2 years, he became a lot more secure and a lot more certainty with me and asked me on the team. And then I graduated assistant security director. And then about the last 5+ years, I became head of security for Tony and traveled and make sure that he could do what he needed to do. So I was still working at that time. Having a full-time job, but I do that on my off time and vacation. Wow. So I could support that. And having that as being around Tony is an amazing experience.
Right.
Not only did I learn a lot of things, but I got to meet so many interesting people that taught me a lot of things about how to handle stuff, and not only in business, but personal life.
Right. So speaking of handling things, where did you pick up the skills that were necessary to, deal with the traumatic event of the Hudson landing, quote unquote?
I think a lot of it came from, first, I think a lot of it came from being around Tony and learning those skill sets, because I learned and absorbed all those. But when I wrote the book Moments Matter, that's why we named the book Moments Matter, because as I started looking at all those things and beginning to think about a book, I was thinking all those moments in my life that I didn't really think meant anything, all mm-hmm. of a sudden, some of those moments actually helped prepare me for that day on the Hudson. And I'll give you one quick example. One day I just thought of this as I was speaking. I forget where I was. But when I was in Boy Scouts, I was going to sing for this thing called Order of the Arrow Award. And basically, you're 12 or 13 years old. Your dad drops you off in the middle of no place. And you got 2 days. I'll see you in 2 days. And you're out there. It's like Survivor in the Boy Scouts. You had to do all these events to get to the end, right? Huh. Great. Uh-huh. But one of the things we had to do is, and this was in Delaware, Ohio, we had to swim across the river with a backpack on to get to the other side so we could do the next activity. Or we had to figure out how to get across. And I swam. And I'm like, so I was thinking maybe that prepared me for jumping in the water in the Hudson River and swimming with my clothes on in 36-degree water, because I didn't have any fear, because I'd done something like that before. That's how the book Moments Matter came about, because of that, thinking of that one thing. So I think there's a combination of all these moments in my life, plus the time being with Tony and Tom Hopkins and Jim Rohn, the other people I had the opportunity to be with.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah. Was any of them Brendan Burchard?
Yep. I met Brendan. I met Brendan after the plane crash. But yes, I met Brendan about 3 years ago, and I think he's tremendous.
Oh, yeah. He's done a lot of good work.
Yep.
Back in the movie, we see what happens to Captain Sullenberger after the crisis. So what was your situation after the crash? I mean, I imagine a lot of people would actually experience PTSD after something like that, but what did you go through?
Well, I think a lot of people who were involved, not only on the plane, but also first responders had either depression or PTSD, as we saw that Captain Sullenberger did. And each one of us were offered by U.S. Airways, they did a tremendous job of counseling and treatment. I didn't take mine, and I never thought that I got to that point. And what I started realizing is I kept asking myself, well, why didn't I go through that like everybody else went through that?
Right.
And I was like, what's the difference between me and them? And I started thinking through this, and I started thinking, I actually grew out of this experience instead of going into a depressed state or even worse, PTSD. Mm-hmm. And so I started figuring out those strategies that I did to be able to grow from a traumatic life event. And that's how I did my, that was the brainchild of how I did my TED talk last year at Queen's University, is about how post-traumatic growth syndrome, how to grow from a traumatic life event.
Mm, okay. Gotcha. Well, and that there's a ton of stuff in there. I mean, it's just, that's a whole Pandora's box of stuff with PTSD, but we'll wait for that a little bit later.
Yeah.
But after that, like, okay, so when did someone approach you about becoming a speaker, or when did you decide that it was time to write a book? I mean, was it after, you know, working with Tony Robbins? I mean, was this something that you kind of saw for yourself before, you know, the event actually happened, or was it the event happened and then it's like, oh, I got something to write about?
Well, there's a little bit of all that in between. So here's part of the backstory. So when I was with Tony, every time I would pick him up at the airport or the helipad, or I was with him, one of the first things he'd always ask me is, why aren't you working for yourself? Why you keep working for that company? And I can tell people, you can only make up so many excuses till he calls BS on you, because, you know, he can get through pretty quick. Yeah. So the only person that called me that night in the hospital was Tony. Mm-hmm. And he said, call me when you get out. And I want to sort of help you through this, because there's a lot of things that are going to hit you. So he and I were talking after this, and, you know, finally came to the point where he's like, you know, you've got a mission. You need to go out and do this yourself. Now need to start your own gig. Stop working for that company. And we were in Chicago, and he called me to a suite, said, I'm going to find another head of security, because I want you to go out and do this. And so he pushed me to do it. But the first time I spoke was at my church, and candidly, I didn't know why I did it, because they asked, it's your church, yeah, they do what you ask you to do. But then I had such an impact on a lot of people. I said, I can impact people by doing this. So I started speaking initially at churches, and then I did it for the Red Cross, and I've spoken over 170 Red Cross events across the country, helped them raise over $12.8 million, which is really part of my passion. But then I started speaking for corporations, because all these lessons and strategies that I use are the same thing that companies go through, whether it's, you know, persistence, or how to do with teams and leadership and mission and focus and these things that I did. I had a lot of business lessons. So that's how I started speaking. And that's finally, my wife gave me permission to do this all, you know, go out and be a big boy and do this all myself, because she loves certainty of me working in the company. But finally she saw that I was pretty good at this. So she gave me permission.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
So, man, this is really, really insightful. I love your story. Sorry, so it's Dave and David on the line. You're Sanderson, I'm Anderson. I love it. You're a brother from another mother.
Yep.
You know, so when, you know, I'm an entrepreneur, I think we all here are entrepreneurs. And so, you know, obviously, when we look at The Miracle in the Hudson, which is a very known story, you know, leadership played a big role in it, right? And I know you speak about leadership with entrepreneurs, you speak about leadership with companies, but, you know, how does that translate, or how what you learned, right, that day, you know, translate to them, right? Right now, they're listening. Like, how does it translate to them? Like, what you learned that day in leadership?
Thanks. That's a great question, Dave, because one of the things I focus on is cultivating your own personal leadership, because there's people talk about corporate, but you got to build your own leadership within. And one of the things that I realized, and I heard it from Tony, but it came to play that day. And I think it's a great lesson, not only for people who are facing a challenging time, for especially with companies or working with teams, because one of the things you realize when you face a literal plane crash or a traumatic life event, whatever you want to call it, is the person with the most certainty in uncertain times becomes the leader. And it doesn't really matter if you're the CEO of a company or you're the guy who's being a janitor at midnight. If you exude certainty and give people certainty, then all of a sudden they look to you to be the leader and you step up. And I think that's one of the greatest lessons that I know I learned that day, but I played. And because one of the things you realize is, you know, there are leaders all over that plane, but there are only a few people that gave certainty in that uncertain time. And I think I did that. I think I know another person who did that at the front of the plane, the door that Captain Sullenberger went out. So I think that was one of the greatest lessons about leadership that I learned and I really talk about is that power of certainty, is being able to have certainty in those times when all stuff's breaking loose in your life.
See, I work in aviation. you know, we keep my company, we keep airplanes in the air, right? We make sure that planes don't crash. And so the when that type of situation happens, just so the audience knows, I mean, you're talking about, you know, anywhere between 200 and 300 people on a plane, if not more, depending on what type of plane it is. And I mean, it's chaotic. I mean, you have older people on that plane. Yep. You have kids on that plane. You have people who have different, maybe, you know, asthma attacks. I mean, you got all kind of stuff happening. So when you talk about that certainty thing, I just want the audience to know that, I mean, it takes a, you have to be a strong leader and have a lot of certainty to command, particularly a kind of a passenger airplane in that moment. You know, with that, what are a few things for, you know, like when you talk about focus action, right, and discipline, yep. What have you seen in your experience that kind of goes across all industries? What's the few things that you've seen that no matter where you speak, no matter where you go around the world, that are, you know, as far as focus action and discipline, yep. That you see these things across, you know, different industries, different companies, different entrepreneurs that are similar?
Oh, thanks. That's a great question, because when you were saying that, there are two things sort of popped into my mind, because, you know, one thing I see not only across companies but people in general is the successful people are really the top 1%. That's what I'm talking about. The people who move from that being good to being outstanding kind of level is they know how to manage their state. They know how to manage their mind. And when you're going down in a plane crash, I give people this example because I lived it. But everybody who's listening is going to have what I call a personal plane crash in life. You're going to have something that's going to happen because no one gets through life unscathed. You know, whether it's a heart attack, whether it's a fire, a flood, something's going to happen. So you got to be able to manage your mind to be able to respond to that. Because one thing you realize, David, when you're going down in a plane crash, you have no control. But one thing you can't control is your mind. And so what I teach people and tell people is there's three ways to do that, right? Through the physiology, the way you move your body to get yourself in that state, the questions you ask yourself or your internal dialogue, and what you focus on. And I give the example of on the plane that day, what I couldn't get up and move around because you're going down pretty fast. And it's happening, like you said, chaotically. It's not just, it's happening chaotically. So the way I manage my mind, state that goes through my mind, the questions I ask myself, my internal dialogue. When I talked to Captain Sullenberger the first time, I asked him that question. He said it was focused. He had to focus in. That's how he managed his mind. So when mm-hmm. something's happening in your life, whether it's in a team, your family, yourself, it's putting yourself in the appropriate state through one of those three ways. And you got to be able to do that all three ways because you never know when something's going to happen. The second thing I tell people that I see across the borders, the effective leaders that I talk to all know how to use sensory acuity to communicate. People say, okay, what the heck is sensory acuity? It's the modalities you're speaking in. Because everybody speaks in a different modality. Where I'm a visual speaker, you can show me something, David, and I get it pretty quick. But if you want to give me a 30-minute dissertation on something, I'll phase out. I mean, I won't listen, right? I was like, give it to me quick. Where this came to light for me was in my relationship with my wife, because my wife is an audio communicator. She wants to tell you 30 minutes of something to get it all out. And I'm a visual. I mean, it's like, just give it to me now. Give me 30 seconds. I got it. You know, and when you have those two kind of people talking in a relationship, it's challenging. So I had to learn to be an audio communicator for my wife to have that relationship. As soon as I learned that technique, because the third way is through kinesthetically, through your body, be able to touch and feel. Once I learned how to communicate in the modality of the person I'm talking to, it changed my relationship. So now I'm in the C-suite. I can talk to somebody in a visual, auditory, kinesthetic way. And all of a sudden, I'm leading them down a path of something that's going to be a benefit for them. So those two things, state management and sensory acuity, are probably the two things across the borders I see that great leaders do.
Wow, thanks. State management, sensory acuity. Okay, so another question for you, right? So I love this principle you talk about, the right thing, right? And it's funny, our corporation, AAR Corporation, we have a slogan, doing it right, right? So doing it right. So when you talk about this right thing in organizations or to people, what if they're not the decision maker, right? What if it's a team? I mean, deal with both of them if you could, right, David? Deal with doing the right thing when you are the decision maker, and then doing the right thing or what the right thing is when you're, you know, not the decision maker. How do leaders how do people step into your principle there?
Well, I'll give you two examples. First thing, my mother, you know, I talk about my mother when I speak, because when I got to the aisle for my time to get out, I heard my mother, who passed away, say in my head, if you do the right thing, God will take care of you. And when I spoke today in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, I told him one thing, great thing about my mother taught me is that she never told me what to do. She said, if, which made me make a choice. And I think my mother's thing was, hopefully I instilled enough values in you that you'd make the proper decision, but it's if. So one of the things that I really talk about now is we don't give our kids enough opportunity to make poor decisions, because we tell them what to do and give them the answer. So number one is doing the right thing is based on your value set. But the second thing is, I go back to when I escorted General Norman Schwarzkopf back in 1999, and I won't tell you the whole story, but I asked him a question, and one of the answers he gave me is that he had to get people in the theater focused on the mission. He goes, as a great leader, you set the mission. You got to remind people daily of the mission. And whatever the mission is, you got to remind them. And so give them latitude to make decisions, but always course correct back to this is the mission. And so basically his mission, he said, was kicking Saddam out of Kuwait. And so that told me the reason why he did not go to Baghdad and clean this thing up once and for all, because that wasn't his mission. His mission was kicking Saddam out of Kuwait. So once he got people focused on that mission and got all the other stuff, because he said people would come to him every day in the theater. Women couldn't drive tanks to Saudi Arabia. They had to cover their heads. They had to pray five times a day. People come to him all the time with these kind of things. He says, how does this contribute to kicking Saddam out of Kuwait? So you got people every day focused in on that mission. He said in 63 days, the mission was done, and he's in and out. What a great lesson for leadership is mission and the value sets of the right, doing the right thing.
And talk about clarity and how effective that is.
That's, oh my God. Awesome.
Simple, to the point, people understand, cut through the chase.
Who made that quote? Who was it, General?
General Norman Schwarzkopf.
Norman Schwarzkopf. Wow, that's an amazing, like, it's amazing. Wow.
Well, that backed up, I think, backed it up on 2009 when I was in the green room meeting Captain Sullenberger for the first time. I asked him, how did he pull the thing off? He said, I had a mission, zero fatalities. And I said, whoa. I mean, that's all he told me at that point. He had one mission, and that's all he focused on, is that one mission. So that just reinforced it. Great leaders, I know the mission, talk about the mission, reinforce the mission, but let people make other decisions and course correct when they need to.
Wow, that's powerful.
Wow, man, that's really powerful. Everyone had to overcome a fear, and I think you've talked about, obviously, Tony Robbins challenged you about this. And so I think I want to stay right there. How did you overcome this fear, you know, maybe that existed as you were working with Tony Robbins? He kept challenging you on, you know, kind of maybe doing your own thing and stepping out on faith. But, you know, can you talk about that a little bit? It's like, how did you overcome that, the fear that was there?
Yeah, and I appreciate that, because, Candler, I had a lot of fear. I, you know, because I have been very successful. I was, not to blow my horn, but I was very successful. I was making a lot of money, you know, doing what I did, because I was pretty good at what I was doing. And here I am going to step out and do something totally different and have no zero income, which was challenging for my wife, Candler. That's why I told her my wife had to buy in. But how I got over the fear is, and Tony and I had a discussion. He was in Palm Springs and I was in L.A., and we were having a discussion about how to do this. And he talked about it. He said, Dave, you know, everybody's got fear, but you got to burn the boats. He said, you just got to burn the boats. Once you burn the boats, you make it a must. And once you make it a must, it's going to happen. And I'm like, okay. So I did that. I just burned the boats. Said, you know what? I cut off everything. No, there's no other options. I've got to succeed. And I got to figure this out. And one thing you figured out, now it's easier than it was back in when I was growing up in the 70s and 80s, because now you got the internet and virtual, what I talk about virtual references. You can get a hold of anybody to tap into their brain. And you don't have to talk to them physically, but you can get into their books. You can get into their podcasts. You get a lot of information from about people, how they think, by just doing that. So that's what I did. I was like, you know, I got to tap into some of these people and understand how do you start from zero and grow this thing? And that's what I did. And so I burned the boats. I made it a must. And my wife was challenged. I was challenged at times. I mean, Kaylin, when cash flow is really rough, right? And all of a sudden you think you got it going, and all of a sudden cash flow hits you. But once you burn the boats, it's a must. You go forward. You don't have any other options. And all of a sudden you start succeeding.
Yeah. That's for me, that's always been a powerful saying. I mean, I think I've learned from it back in 2006 or so. So I've known it for, what, 10 years now. And You know, it's the truth. I mean, it's like, you know, I, for example, had a background in academia, and like for the longest time, I thought I was going to be a professor until I didn't, because I didn't want to play the politics, right? And once I got out of that, you know, my biggest focus was, since I had been focusing on entrepreneurship in my grad school days, I was like, okay, I want to go into this entrepreneur, the tech entrepreneurial world. And I did. And things worked out, and it's been kind of a roller coaster ever since. I mean, but it's entrepreneurship, and it's always going to be like that. So, no, I completely agree with what you're saying there. Earlier in the conversation, we had discussed that you actually experienced growth from having gone through the crisis. However, you know, not everyone can see this silver lighting from traumatic events that they might go through. And many times those people become victims of PTSD themselves. And, you know, I know you work with folks on this. Who do you primarily work with, and how do you help them cope or deal with the things that they've had to deal with?
Well, thank you, because this is one of my passions right now. And like I mentioned, I didn't need therapy, but it's like, why deny not me, but them? And I started figuring out why that was going on, and it really came to light when I did an interview with AARP magazine, which came out, I thought I was too young for anyway. But they went interview because they found out that I helped the American Red Cross raise at that point up to $8 million, but no one else was doing any of this, and a lot of people were in depression. They said, we want to get in your head on the strategies, because you got this thing called PTGS, post traumatic growth syndrome. And I'm like, all right, I've never heard of that. And they start explaining it to me. And I started breaking down. This is why I did my TED talk. I wanted to break down for people, because I've been talking to people who came back primarily initially from Iraq, because they were, a lot of these folks, women and men, were challenged. Whether they lost a limb, they lost a friend, they got back, they didn't have a job, and they were going through different levels of depression. So since I live in North Carolina, I was pretty close to a couple bases here, so they could get to Charlotte pretty easily where I live.
Right. But now.
I do a lot of talks and work with law enforcement and primarily sheriffs because of what's going on in law enforcement right now, because they don't know which ends up. And Canley, you know, they go out to do their job, they do a tremendous job, and all of a sudden they're in the news and people are, you know, vile to them. So their minds are messed up. They don't know what to do. So they're stagnant. So I tell them, I teach them initially about three different strategies. Number one, I've already talked about state management, how to put yourself in the appropriate state and get them in that appropriate state. But the second thing is probably the most powerful thing that I talk about and teach, is the power of meaning. Because one of the things I've learned is, you know, meaning equals your emotion in life, and emotion is your life. You know, and that, so I've always, once I started realizing I could tell and teach both people how to do that, and the technique that I use, and I'm not new at this, I'm not the only guy doing this, but it's the technique and tool of reframing, how to reframe meanings. Because, you know, and where that came to life for me, guys, was I was in the green room of Good Morning America, and one of the other passengers went into a rage. I mean, he went crazy. I mean, he's just yelling and told me he's never going to see us again. And all of a sudden, I realized that he said he was going through a divorce. He's losing his job. And also, I started thinking, you know, the meaning I attached to this was a blessing. The meaning he attached to this was totally negative. It's a loss. And when people do that, they start chunking so deep. And one of the questions they keep asking themselves is, why does this always happen to me? Why does this happen to me? Why did it happen to him? So all of a sudden, you start hearing this over and over in your head. You get dig so deep, it's hard to get out. So therefore, you go from depression all the way to PTSD, which is really bad. So I get people to show them how to reframe the meanings to something more advantageous or appropriate. Maybe not positive, but at least appropriate. Whether they've lost a child, a fire, a flood, a health scare, somebody, you know, it's like for guys who are coming back from the war. You know, they have negative meanings to this, and I've got to help them reframe that by asking them different questions and get them in the appropriate state. And the third step that I do is show people, what I talked about earlier, is about virtual references. Getting them, because I tell people, you're not, and this is something that my dad told me on his deathbed, you're not the first guy to go through this. You know, somebody else in this world's gone through something. You're not, you don't invent stuff like that. So finding those people who've gone through it and have either survived or thrived and grew. So I find, trying to find those virtual references to help people find those so they can at least interact with them or read about them and learn about them. So those three things is what I teach and help people grow from a traumatic life event. So I'm honored to do that. And that's one of the things I'm really passionate about now.
Yeah, that's great.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah. So what are you excited about in the future?
Well, what I'm really excited about is I'm working with an organization in Atlanta where we put together a workshop called Learn the Leadership Mindset Series, and with Dominique Wilkins and Steve Nandovic, who's the Chief Cultural Officer at Chick-fil-A, and Don Barton, who's the CEO of 3CI, about what does it take really to have that top servant leadership mind and go to that Hall of Fame level. I'm really excited to be teaching with those esteemed folks, but also my daily flash briefing on Amazon, which has really opened up so many other avenues for me, because I never knew about this technology until I interacted with somebody on Gary Vaynerchuk's team who said, hey, have you thought about this? Because this is the next wave in technology. And I said, never heard of it. Within 2 weeks, I'm on Amazon and having my own show on a daily basis, getting new content. That's called Dave Sanderson Declassified. Being able to share new content with people like yourselves who could share, declassify a piece of information very quickly for people on a daily basis, which is really great for people to get new, learn new content in 5 minutes. So those are really two of the things I'm really passionate about.
Just so our audience hears that again, what is that called, and yep. what platform is that?
So it's on Amazon. If you have an Echo product, it's called a flash. It's daily flash briefing. You can enable a skill called daily flash briefing, and mine is called Dave Sanderson Declassified. And there's only about 2,000 people doing it right now, so it's the next wave, the power of voice. But I've also taken a different direction. Not only do that on a daily basis, so if you have that technology, but if you go to my website, I've now downloaded it to my website, so now you can listen to it on my website. So it drives people to my website to see some of the other things that I'm doing. But it's the power of voice is what the next technology is being able to interact without having to key anything in, interaction, to hear your voice. It's amazing technology, and it's opened up so many new avenues for me.
Wow. I'll definitely have to check that out. Going into the next section, this is usually a lot of listeners' favorite section. It's called the section. It's the lead rapid fire questions section. And first question I got for you is, who are three influencers or teachers that have launched you where you're at today?
I would say Jim Moran, who was my first boss out of college. Bill, my mentor, who gave me the insight of why having a mentor being important. And of course, Tony Robbins, because I was with him for so long.
In the last several years, what's something that you've become good at saying no to?
Oh, yeah. Every interview. I get asked for a lot of interviews. And so I've had to learn to say no to people who want to talk to me all the time.
Uh-huh. Got it. That's good.
Okay, so the next question I got for you, Dave, is what's the best advice that you've ever received?
Don't take yourself too seriously. I think really? You know, a lot of us focus on personal significance, and candidly, don't take yourself too seriously.
You never get out alive. Yep. That's an old what was that? Van Wilder saying.
That's a good one. All right, so what issue do you believe people ought to be talking about right now? But not hardly anyone is.
Well, the issue that I wish people would talk about more, and this is one thing I'm really working on myself, is make decisions and live by your decisions. Because I think one of the things as a parent is we don't challenge our kids enough to make decisions because we give them the answers too easily. And I'm guilty of that likewise. So I would say the thing that we need to talk about is be able to make decisions and live with your decisions and own up to your decisions.
Okay, good stuff.
Excellent. And how can someone be a difference maker in their community?
I think number one is goes back to something I just said a moment ago. You know, be a difference maker. You invest the time into your community, but, you know, check your personal significance at the door. And for you, remember, it's not about you. It's about the greater good. It's about the bigger, greater being. And if you do that, you can not only add value to the community, but can add value outside your community and, more importantly, impact people's lives.
Excellent. Well, Dave, thank you so much for coming on with us today. It's been a heck of a nice conversation with you. And again, people can find you on your website at davesandersonspeaks.com, I believe. Where else can they find you on social media?
Well, it's great. Thank you very much. If they go to my Facebook at Dave Sanderson Speaks, that's my business page where you can get a lot of the business insights. On LinkedIn, I do a lot on LinkedIn at David Sanderson. And on Twitter, it's Dave Sanderson too, where I do like those daily quips things. But like anything else, like I just said, my daily flash briefing on Amazon. You have an Echo product, just download, enable the skill, and it's Dave Sanderson Declassified.
Excellent. Awesome. Well, again, Dave, thank you so much for being on with us today, and Yeah, it was a pleasure.
Same here. Thank you very much, guys.
So there you have it. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dave today. You know, he sounds like he's a pretty determined guy, and I'm happy to hear he's doing some great work with folks who have PTSD, especially the first responders. Truly an example of what it means to live your mission. And today's show note extras, which again can be found at newinceptions.com/120. I have some videos that I wanted to share with you guys, the first of which is a short news piece from CBS affiliate KMTV interviewing Dave. And I wanted to include this one because we really didn't discuss the actual crash that much. You know, he dives into a little bit more in detail here. And then the next up, there's a candid video of Tony Robbins praising Dave and what he did that day, which I thought was kind of cool because how often do you actually have Tony Robbins, you know, giving you a pat on the back? And then I have Dave's TEDx talk about post-traumatic growth syndrome that he spoke about in our chat. And you really have to admire his spin on things and how to, you know, grow from such a horrific situation. And last, I have a longer interview with Titania Jordan where he shares more of his strategies in coping with PTSD. That's it, guys. In the next session, session 121, I'll be joined once again by Harrison Painter as we talk with the leader of the Bold and Introverted Business Community on Facebook. And her name is Kate St. Hilaire. You know, introversion is something that Harrison and I have both had to get over in our day-to-day lives. And we know that it can be a huge hurdle when it comes to getting your message out there. So Kate will talk about her own journey and how she helps to empower others to, you know, get their unique message out into the world. So stay tuned for that one coming out in the next couple weeks. But until then, that's it for session 120, guys. Don't forget to go get your free Fizzle membership today if you want a truly authentic resource to help you build your business. Visit newinceptions.com/fizzle. And that said, thanks for joining Dave, David, and myself today. Till next time, gang, dig in, have fun, and take care of whatever you're creating. And I'll see you back here in the next session.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions. On Twitter at New Inceptions, Instagram at New.Inceptions, and on the web at newinceptions.com.